VentureCast.
If you try things, eventually something's going to work and you'll get the propulsion, you'll get that forward movement that takes you to the next level, but you've got to be prepared to fail. If you expect failure, you can expect to learn. If you expect to learn, you expect to get better. If you expect to get better, you can win.
Hi, and welcome to Deep Leadership. I'm your host, John Rennie. Well, I hope all is well with you today. Spring is here, and it's another beautiful day here in North Carolina. This episode is brought to you by our sponsors, LeaderConnect, Ignite Management Services, and Liberty Strength. These sponsors help me bring these shows to you each and every week, so I encourage you to click on their links below and check them out. Well, that is it. Today, we're going to be talking about growth, happiness, and success in business and life. My guest is Rick Walker. Rick has done a lot in his life, from building a 400-employee company to scaling a 2,000-person nonprofit company to running for Congress. He's also met and interviewed some of the world's most successful leaders. In that time, he's learned a lot about leadership and life, and we sat down and discussed the lessons he's learned along the way and what it takes to lead a business and live a happy life. So, are you ready to dive in? Let's get started.
Welcome to Deep Leadership. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former Cold War submarine officer who spent 20-plus years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters. Leadership matters. Are you ready for some real-world, actionable advice from John as well as his expert guests?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
The show starts right now.
Welcome to the Deep Leadership Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Rick Walker. Rick is a renowned leader across multiple domains. As founder and CEO, he built a 400-employee company. He scaled a 2,000-plus team-member nonprofit into 53 countries as chairman and recruited $5 billion of capital investment to his hometown to generate 5,000 new jobs. Rick currently serves as asset director at Strategic Capital, the private equity firm he founded. He is the host of Conversations at the Mansion, where he interviews guests like Dr. Ben Carson, Senator Mike Lee, Lee Greenwood, Congressman Dan Kershaw, and others. And I'm excited to have him on the show to learn from his leadership experiences and what he's learned talking to some of the world's most powerful leaders. So, Rick, welcome to the show.
John, it's great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's an honor to have you on the show, sir, and I'd be interested to talk to you about your personal experiences, and then you're getting a chance to talk to these amazing leaders, so I want to talk about that as well. But first of all, talk us through some of the amazing accomplishments in your own career. Now, you know, because I think you've had three decades of like your 20s, your 30s, and now in your 40s, you've actually had three different chapters in your life. Could you tell us a little bit about what you've done through those generations and through that time, and then what leadership experiences have you learned, or what have you learned about leadership through those experiences?
Sure, John. Well, so when I was 19, I started my first business, screwed up to 400 W-2 employees when we were 26. About that time, I realized that there's a principle at play that C.S. Lewis talks about it, that nothing that you have not given away will ever really be yours. That if you want to hang on to something, you've got to give it away. That's how love works. You have to give away love in order to get love. That's also essentially how generosity works. If you want to have more, you give away in order to get more. And so we started giving away large sums of our income in my mid-20s. And so we found ourselves in really interesting conversations with really interesting organizations that did really great things in the nonprofit sector. And so what I found was I could take my business skills and apply them to the nonprofit sector, and I could functionally work in both arenas simultaneously. And it would be accretive, and it would also allow me to have better leverage over my time. So some of the experiences that you mentioned in your introduction are things that happened to me while I was working both at the same time. So generally, I would work 8 hours a day in my business and then 8 hours a day doing nonprofit work. And I spent probably 15 years doing that. Mm. And so obviously, if you're working 16-hour days, you're learning and you're iterating twice as fast as most other people that are just working 8 hours a day. And so I just turned 45. So say I've been working for 25 years. Well, I've got 50 years of experience. That's 50 years of failure, but it's also 50 years of experience. and I have the energy of a 45-year-old. So it gives you a massive competitive advantage to be able to do that. I highly encourage folks to take the opportunity to serve the local communities, serve nonprofits, and be able to sharpen their skill sets in both domains.
It's interesting you say that. One of the things you talk about is that you were working 8 hours a day in one business and in your business and 8 hours a day in nonprofit. One of the things that we learned about you before we press record is you get up at 3:30 in the morning. And even though that's not a question I had on my list, but my curiosity is what, when did you start that habit and how have you found that to be effective in your leadership journey?
So 2 years ago, I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine. We're about the same age, but he's better looking. He's better dressed. He comes from a wealthier family. He's got a bigger company. He has everything, a different industry, but he told me he gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I thought, well, man, I've got to compete against guys like this in life. Like I've got a legacy to live, to give. And so I just decided that instead of getting up at 5 in the morning, I'd get a little earlier. So 1 week I went to 4:45, then 4:30, and ratcheted earlier and earlier. Finally got to 3:30. 3:15 was a little bit too early, but 3:30 was a good place to settle. And so I did that every morning for a year, except for Saturdays and Sundays. So Monday through Friday for a year in 2022. And that had a remarkable impact on my learnings because what I did was I would get up at 3:30. And the key to this is having a good, I guess, good chain of causal events that propel you forward. So you keep the phone in the opposite room. So I kept it in my closet. I still do. Alarm goes off. I've got to get up out of bed. I've got to go in the closet, turn it off. Well, the lights are already on. I'm already awake. Hell, I might as well put some clothes on and get to work. So I do that. So I get to work. I drive 20 minutes to the office. I'm in my office with a cup of coffee at 4:15, and I'm able to start reading. So I'll generally read. I'm a Christian, so I read my Bible for about an hour, and then I read other sorts of great literature, poetry, music, history, things like that for about another hour. By that time, it's about 6:15. And I've got a pretty solid jump on the day, and I can spend the delta between then and 8 a.m. on things like strategy, just general thinking, writing a book, writing a blog, anything I want to do strategically. And it gives me a major jump start on the day, but it also gives me this competitive advantage. It's hard for anyone to catch up to you because you've already put the time into learning that during the day, and there's no distractions either at 4:15 in the morning. You can shut your phone off and read and think whatever you want to do. And so that's been very, very creative to me becoming the type of man that I want to be and also the type of father, the type of husband I want to be.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know for me, at least, I'm most creative and most, I make better decisions before noon. And I've recognized that about me. So for me, getting up at 4 a.m. is all about maximizing my peak window, which I know is from 4 in the morning till noon. After that, I look at grunt work and, you know, I don't do any difficult things after lunch because I know that's where I've got this window where I'm super creative. I'm doing my deep thinking at that time in the morning. And it sounds like you've found the same as well in your journey.
Yes, yes. You certainly got to get off the devices. You got to get off the devices, get off the phone. Don't watch any YouTube. Don't do anything in the mornings. You know, and I try to stay off of devices until around 11 a.m., unless I'm obviously writing on a computer. And then at the end of the day, about 9 o'clock, I'm off. Devices plugged in the other room and that's it. But yeah, you've got to destroy the dopamine machine.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Which is in every one of our pockets and it's by our bedstand. And we just have to get rid of it. I like the idea, put it in the closet, get it away. Mine's on a different floor because I don't want it anywhere near me. I want to be able
to see. That's smart.
So I love that. So you built your first company, you mentioned earlier, to 400 employees. You started when you were 19. How crazy is that? What did you learn about yourself and your leadership style during that startup process?
I learned that I could handle a massive amount of work. So let me give you an idea. So we grew up pretty poor. We grew up in a two-bedroom house. My dad, my family, we never knew anyone that had 100 employees, let alone 400. And so I was working out of a Starbucks and different various cafes with one of those big, thick laptops back then. And I was doing my own accounting, doing my own payroll. And I didn't have a management team. And back then you had to print off all the W-2s and mail them out at a time. And I had to count the number of W-2s so that I knew how many stamps to go buy at the post office. And I think I got to like 432. I'm like, this is kind of crazy. And I don't have a clue what I'm doing. And so I realized that I had an appetite that was a little bit bigger than my skill set. And I needed to catch up. I did not take school very seriously at all. And I just was really left with a big deficit. And so about that time, I started being able to meet people just randomly who had taken organizations to the much, much larger levels. We're talking people that had 1,000, 10,000, 50,000 employees who I just got to know, and they took me under their wing and mentored me and just taught me how to scale. And that was very, very helpful for me in my formative years, mid-20s to early 30s, to be able to conceptualize what I needed to do and lead a team from one point to the next point. And I even really managed the process of transformation. And the surprising thing was my desire to be a micromanager at that time proved salacious. It was too much. I was trying too hard. And the less I tried, the better it got.
That's interesting because I think we hear that a lot. You know, I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs. We hear that a lot, which is one of the hardest things that, you know, startup founders have is the ability to let go. Because when you start small and you're, like you said, you're doing accounting, you're doing sales, you're doing marketing, you're doing, you know, the actual fulfilling the orders, if you will. And so we've got really good at those things. And so it's really hard for us to let go and let others, you know, take the reins. And that's usually what caps companies from growing. So it sounds like somewhere along the line, you learned that early on, which is, okay, I need to start letting go of certain things so that I can actually grow and have some space to grow.
That's right. And if you want to see how good an organization you've built so far, put yourself in the position where you need to disappear for 6 months, right? If you're married, you want to see how the organization runs if you die and your wife is left alone. I actually ran for U.S. Congress a number of years ago, and I took 6 months off, and everything was great. Everything was fantastic. I may have worked 1 hour a week tops, but I really just disappeared for 6 months, and it was great. Right now I'm in a period where I'm writing a book, and the last 4 months I've worked on average around 2 or 3 hours a week, and that's been shockingly good, and the business has grown. And so I think it's good for you to test to see what happens. Like the whole world's not going to explode. Like there's nothing that detrimental as long as you have a team in place. If you have a 5-person team, they'll figure it out. I mean, they like to have jobs. They like to eat. Like they're gonna figure things out. And it's a great opportunity for you to stress test your situation just for your spouse's sake, if you have a spouse.
I love you say that. I talk to several entrepreneurs who say that similar thing, which is, that's a great way to test to see whether your organization is capable. And I know this summer, for example, I did a month in Maine. My wife and I rented a cabin. We just disappeared and we worked for a month out of Maine. She's a school teacher, was off for the summer. And you know what? The company did fine. And there were many crises, and if there was a call here and there, but everybody was able to handle. And they actually, the other thing too, is you signal to your team that you trust them with the keys to the car and say, here, drive it around for a while. And I think that's a great message to send to your people.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to do some crazy things that are trusting. So in the last 90 days, we had a new employee, very, very smart, graduated from an Ivy League school with a master's degree, MBA, came on board, and she's been with us for a year. And she landed a $30+ million opportunity, an account, like a $30 million account. And I said, I'm here if you need any help. She thought she could handle herself, and so she handled it herself. And she did a great job with it. But sometimes you just have to trust people, right? I mean, everyone wants to succeed. Everyone wants to look good. And if you trust people to a crazy degree, like they can't believe you're not checking up on them about that, well, you know, it tells a lot about the culture that you're trying to build. And so I prefer to err on the side of shocking autonomy for the team member. I want them to know that I trust them, even if I don't even know them. I'm gonna trust them as the starting point and see what happens. If I have to manage them, they're in the wrong company.
I love that. That's a great message for leaders. I hope you're hearing that. Trust them. Trust them. Give them the keys. Let them see what they can do. It's great for you and them. So for sure. You know, looking back on your leadership journey so far, especially in those early years, what would you say you did right as a leader? And what are some things maybe you think you should have done differently? Or now that you're older and you look back, it's like, I probably should have done some things differently.
Yeah. So it's paradoxical that the faster you want to grow, the faster you want to maneuver, the smaller the team. That you implicitly think that you've got to build a bigger team, bigger organization, because you've got this prideful mindset where you want to see your little kingdom. And so you're always hiring people, you're always interviewing people, you're always thinking how you're going to grow. And you spend 100%, you spend 120% of the capital that you've got to build this organization, which never really repays you. But if you can get past that prideful anticipation of how many people I can hire, how many people I can have sitting around my boardroom, how many people I can see in the office, you could really do some really great things with that capital and with that time and that attention. Remember, more people take more time and more attention away from you. I think it was Peter Drucker that told us that the most ideal company is the one with zero employees, right? Obviously, the second best would be one with one employee. And I've seen that happen time and time again, where as I go through iterations where I will downsize for particular reasons, and the downsizing is typically outsourcing large components of the business, that is when we've seen the next major leap in the revenue, in the profitability, in the simplification of the business, not when you try to scale up the overhead and the staff and the headcount. Like that's you've got to defeat the pride of needing a big staff. You've got to get over that. That'll keep you broke and it'll keep you poor.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
As a leader, you're responsible for the mission and the people assigned to you. Regardless of the size of your team, employees are depending on you for their lives and careers. For the sake of your team and the people who entrust you with this role, you need to master the skills to become a great leader. Best-selling leadership author John Rennie is proud to introduce the Qualified Leadership Book Series. This new series teaches you how to become a people-centered leader. Great leaders know that employees who are respected, appreciated, and allowed to grow will go the extra mile. These books provide real-world leadership wisdom written from a hands-on perspective. If you want to be a more effective leader, this is the one book series you should read this year. This three-book series contains the following best-selling leadership books: I Have the Watch, You Have the Watch, and All in the Same Boat, for one low price of $39.99. Begin your journey to become a leader worth following. Go to johnsrennie.com and get your order in today.
This episode is brought to you by Leader Connect, a leadership training company and video platform founded by the leadership book author and Deep Leadership Podcast guest, Neil Jurd. Leader Connect is a video and podcast streaming platform for leaders and teams. Watch it alone or as a team, and each video supports you and your team, allowing you to improve performance and build a great culture. Join hundreds of experts and learn about leadership, planning, public speaking, team building, mindfulness, and a range of other subjects that will help you lead well and build a great team. I'm proud to say that I'm one of the experts on this platform. Leader Connect is offering a 10% discount to all Deep Leadership listeners. Go to leader-connect.co.uk and enter the code DEEP at checkout. Master your leadership with Leader Connect.
This episode is brought to you by Ignite Management Services. Ignite is led by Mike Watson, who you might remember from episode 137. Mike and his team believe that everything starts with leadership, whether it's strategy execution or cultural transformation. It's the role of the leader to create the conditions for their people to succeed. The team at Ignite can help you develop critical habits to enhance your leadership capability and transform your business. Ignite Management is now offering the Resilient Leadership Assessment Tool. This is an online questionnaire designed to assess and guide leadership development, coaching, and team building. It provides leaders an opportunity to gain insights into their leadership strengths and development needs. After taking this assessment, you will receive a custom detailed report that provides practical and actionable recommendations to enhance your effectiveness. I have taken this assessment myself and found it to be extremely valuable in helping me make changes to my leadership approach. Right now, Ignite is offering 15% off the price of this tool to the Deep Leadership audience. Go to ignitemanagement.ca and enter the code START15 at checkout to get started today.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing some things in our company now where we're starting to rethink the original plans that we have for the company. You know, we always said that our company may not look like what we planned it 8 years ago, but now they're sort of thinking like, well, we found a niche. We're very successful in the niche. Why do we need to go to another, you know, why do we need to scale up? We're very happy doing what we're doing, you know? And so you're right. Part of it is pride. You want to be big. You want to be the first. You want to be the best. But there's something to be said is if you've created a situation where everybody loves to come to work, you're making money, your employees are happy, you know, it's a good place to be. You're creating great jobs. Why not just keep doing what you're doing? Again, what are the things that we could do to potentially outsource some of the things that we're doing? And again, get that chance to grow, but do it organically and not do it through just, you know, sheer will, like a lot of entrepreneurs do. We got to grow 10% this year, 10% next year. Why not just create a place where people enjoy coming to work and you're doing great things and you're making an impact? What's wrong with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're not enjoying what you're doing, what are you doing with your life? I mean, you're going to waste your life to make some money that your wife's next husband is just going to spend on a Ferrari? I mean, what kind of insanity is that? The new status symbol is taking care of your elderly parents, taking care of your kids that need to go to college, to give back to your community. You're the person that writes the checks that no one knows where the money came from the nonprofits around you. That's the status symbol, is anonymity and taking care of your own, not trying to be the person that's out and about trying to build a big organization. That's so 2020. I mean, that's 3 years ago. We've pivoted. If we're going to be real men, real women of purpose and of destiny, we're going to focus on the things that are important, and money is not important whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely something I've learned. It is hard too, making a transition from 22 years working in big corporations where, you know, every year was they turn up the treadmill on you 10% more, 15% more. So you're in that mindset. So you got to be more and more and more. And I've done that for 8 years in my company. And now I've been thinking about lately, like, why more? It's my company. I'll do whatever I like, you know, what are the customers like? What do they know us for? What's our reputation in the market? What can we do good for our employees, our community, and the people around us? That seems to be more important to me than that 15% growth every year.
Absolutely, John. And I had a revelation last year when I was doing my plan. I'm a very detailed planner. I do weekly, quarterly, annual planning for days at a time. And I had this revelation that it's not what you do, it's who you become that matters. That I realized that I was meant not to build a big business, not to get rich, not to be richer, not to help other people become richer. My destiny is to become passionate, disciplined, and wise, and then use my very being of being passionate, disciplined, and wise to go out and help people and get maximal leverage on my time. So it's not what you do, it's why you do it that matters. And if you can get past this doing, this entrepreneurial curse of doing, you can live free. And that's what entrepreneurs are trapped in, and that's what the hustle culture teaches them. I don't care what the hustle culture teaches me. I get up at 3:30 because I want to get up at 3:30. Mm-hmm. I don't need to get up at 3:30. I don't go to work because I need to pay the bills or I want to build a big business. I work because I want to. When I don't want to work, I won't work. I mean, that's the way life goes. And that's the type of men and women we're called to be. We're called to be people of passion, people of purpose, not people that live for the, as Dante says, the filthy lucre. Like that's not a redemptive utilization of humanity.
I love that. But also you're making an impact too. You know, it's not like we're, you know, like you said, you found your purpose. I think that's one of the things that leaders often struggle is what's your true north? And you mentioned, you know, you're passionate, disciplined, wisdom, you know, you have your true north, what you've been put on earth to do. And I think a lot of leaders struggle with that. Why am I here? What am I doing? Is it just to make the next, you know, million? Is it to get to 500 employees next? What's next? You know, and I think one of the things I would say age, at least for me, has helped me to see that, you know, chasing things, I've had things, right? I more enjoy moments now. I enjoy experiences more than I enjoy things. I could care less about things nowadays. And I think when you find that out and you discover your true north and why you're on earth and you're not just chasing that rabbit, I think you find, as you said, you find some level of peace and comfort and enjoyment in what you do. I think that's really good advice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You've got to get to the place where you enjoy being you. Not that it's a selfish enjoyment, but that you're proud that if you died tomorrow, you'd be happy how you live today. And that's one thing that most men, most women are not proud of. They are focused on themselves. They spend their time on their devices. They spend their time on social media. They don't spend time with their kids, and they don't spend time with the people that really matter. Think about the people that are going to actually show up to your funeral. Like, spend time with those people, maybe. I don't know. I mean, yeah. If you think Bob that you met at a networking event 2 weeks ago is the guy that you want to invest your Friday night in, I don't know. It's like, you know, how can you think that you're going to live forever and invest your time and just spend it everywhere? It's like a business. Every single business can use up an infinite amount of capital. So don't think you're a small business that's doing $500,000 or $1 million or $5 million or $10 million a year, that you just need one more $1 million to invest it to get through this big software push or this big marketing push or staff it up. Your business needs an infinite amount of capital. You've got to cap it off at some point. Stop worrying about it and just let the team members take it. You've got to be able to focus on life. We're called to live, not called to be enslaved to some entity that's more or less your wife's probably going to close down after you die anyway.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I love it. So focus on the six men that are going to carry your coffin, right?
Or that's right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to switch gears a little bit. You host this show called Conversations at the Mansion. It's fascinating. You've had some amazing guests. I was just going to ask you, you know, how did that get started? You know, who are some of the people you've met and kind of what are some of those experiences or what have you learned from these people, these world leaders, their experiences? Are there some things that you've learned that you could share with us?
Yeah. A few years ago, my executive assistant was sitting at a desk next to our marketing manager, and she would see who I would go out to have lunch with and dinner with. And they were, a lot of them were people that people, you know, your audience would have heard of. And the marketing manager's thinking, well, everyone's doing video content. Like, why can't we do some video content? And they started talking. And I thought, well, maybe Rick could just invite people he knows and friends of friends and sit down and just have a conversation with them. And so we started and it got out of control very quickly. So my first conversation was former Navy SEAL, U.S. Congressman Dan Crenshaw. You may have seen him on Saturday Night Live. Just a great guy. Second conversation with a friend of mine, Tony Busby. He's just a remarkable lawyer. You know, he's friends with Snoop, friends with 50 Cent. He knows everybody. Just a really cool guy. And then U.S. Senator Mike Lee. We had Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson. He's former Secretary of HUD. He came into the show. Lee Greenwood, who we discussed before the show, the music artist, David Weekly, who runs a $3 billion home builder here in the U.S. Halftime, he runs that halftime. He spends the other half of his time doing nonprofit work. Greg Berman, former CEO of Continental Airlines, former CEO of Burger King, really savvy private equity guy. And I just had a number of really interesting guys in, and at one point, we worked. I was speaking with someone that was trying to raise some money for an organization called Turning Point USA. Charlie Kirk is the main guy there, and I said, "Well, hey, you know, we'd love to host an event for you, but I'd like to have a speaker show up so that we can do this." He said, "Well, tell you what, Rick, you open your place up, host a fundraiser for us, and I'll have someone come." And so we had Donald Trump Jr. come. No, what? Now the thing with that is he still has Secret Service protection. And when he's going to come, Secret Service has to do the whole ordeal. And so Secret Service is actually here for 5 days, prepping, running motorcade runs from the downtown here, practice parking, practice getting him in there. And so we did the whole ordeal. And so that first interview started where we were here with Dan Crenshaw, and we had some staff here, and he got a coffee. The last interview, this is probably number 13 or 14, we had a couple hundred people there, a couple hundred people here. We had valet, we had open bar, we had pass hors d'oeuvres, we had Secret Service, we had an outer security perimeter from the Sheriff's Department, which you got to pay for all that stuff. And we had, I think we were running 6 cameras that day. If you watch the intro to that interview, I think you'll see 6 cameras. And it just got to be nuts, though. It got to be nuts. And then I asked the marketing manager at the end of the season, I said, well, how'd you do this year for your budget? She said, Rick, I was in budget, but the podcast went a little bit over. I said, well, how far over do we go? Well, you went $250,000 over.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. So I thought, you know what? Maybe some Zoom interviews would be more appropriate. And so we've done mostly that, but we've done some cool things over the years, and I'm having a lot of fun.
That's really good. I mean, are there some themes or some takeaways that you've learned from talking with these people that are, you know, that are household names? I mean, are there some commonalities amongst their stories that says this is how they achieved their level of success, or that they've stood out, you know, beyond the crowd? I mean, Dr. Ben Carson is someone that did not grow up with much, and he ended up being, you know, reaching the highest levels of government. So maybe, are there any themes or messages that you learned through those interviews?
Absolutely. So Dr. Carson is probably one of the more brilliant people that has ever lived. Keep in mind, this is the man who separated the first set of conjoined twins in South Africa. This is the man who was the chair of the pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins. This is a man who ran the largest housing organization in the world. This is a very, very brilliant man. And his main thing is he takes care of people. He wants to get to know you. He was scheduled to be here. Just if you see that painting right there on the other side of that wall is my personal office. And he showed up 5 hours early, he and his wife, Candy. And they just hung out there. They rested. They came in and chit-chatted. I had my kids here. He wanted to know about them, about school, everything. Just one of the most pleasing people that you can imagine, not focused on themselves, not focused on, hey, this is what I need you to do, but focused on how can I get to know you? What do you want to share with me? And how can I help you and encourage you in your pursuit? And that seems to be a common theme. I once had a private meeting with a United States president, and the exact same thing. For an hour, he wants to know what everyone else is doing, what they're up to, how they're doing, how he can help them. He didn't speak about himself. And that's what you tend to see in the great leaders. You saw this in Clinton. You saw this in H.W. Bush. You definitely saw this in W. Bush and Obama. These are people. They love people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us don't. And we've got to retrain our minds and realize that all you have is people. That's the only thing that you have is relationships and people. And people will see through your disingenuousness, and they will see the fakeness of your smile, the fakeness of what you're trying to really get out of them. And if you just enjoy being with people, you honestly want to help people, and you lead with the help, you help first, you will be given unimaginable opportunities that you would never would even thought to have the gumption to ask for, just by being in the room and saying yes and helping wherever you can. And that's just generally been the story of my life. I mean, it's just been the most insane happening over and over and over again. I mean, my wife, I took off of work a couple months ago for my wife's birthday. We took her to the Galleria here in Houston to go shoe shopping for her birthday. And in walks Dennis Rodman. You remember Dennis Rodman for the Bulls?
Yeah.
And of course, I just watched the full episode about Dennis Rodman on the Netflix special. And he walks in, stops and talks to my wife, and he decides to go help her shoe shop for her birthday. Oh, and so we hang out with Dennis Rodman to go shoe shopping for her birthday. We go over to the bar. He said, like, let's have drinks, have dinner. Well, we've got to go to dinner. So we go up and go to dinner. And then after dinner, we go meet one of my other friends for drinks. And there is Jeremy Renner from the Avengers, Hawkeye from the Avengers. And we start talking to Hawkeye. And he said, we said, our daughter really loves you. He said, well, let's get her on the phone. He FaceTimes my middle daughter twice, just to chat with her and encourage her in school and everything. It's the most incredible things that all came from this mindset that we want to help other people. We want to be as friendly as possible. If anyone asks anything of us that's useful for either nonprofits or helping other people in their purpose, we're going to say yes, or we're going to help wherever we can. And each of these things that happen just in that one day, or these relationships with meeting, you know, the most powerful man in the world and having a private meeting with him, those all happened because we were helping nonprofits. We were helping other people achieve their dreams, not from a public stage, but it just happened. And what happens? We get these unimaginable little side benefits that are just crazy over and over and over again, that somehow the universe or God or whatever you want to believe in just sends your way, that nothing that you've not given away will ever really be yours. And that's the principle we live by.
That's absolutely such a powerful message, because it's kind of counterintuitive, right? We think if we put ourselves first, if we hustle culture, we're going to get on top. But you're saying what you found with these incredible world leaders in your observations, they put other people first, and you have put other people first. And as a result, you've seen great things happen in your life by putting others first. And that's such a counterintuitive message, but it's such an important message, because that's what leadership is all about. It's about empowering other people, you know, getting their best. And it's not about you as leader. It's about the people that work for you. It's the people that you're around. And I think that's a great way to wrap up this part of the discussion. That's fantastic. What final message would you like to leave with our listeners?
I would be blessed if you would go try something that you know you need to do, but you're too afraid to do it. And it should be the most difficult thing that you know you should be doing. It should be something that you're not prepared to do, something that you don't have the skill set to do, something you don't have the network to do, but go try it. Go put the work in, because as Einstein knew, failure, a lot of the times, is only misunderstood genius. That if you try things, eventually something's going to work, and you'll get the propulsion, you'll get that forward movement that takes you to the next level, but you've got to be prepared to fail. If you expect failure, you can expect to learn. If you expect to learn, you expect to get better. And you expect to get better, you can win.
Wow. That is a great piece of advice. Listeners, I hope you heard that. I hope you wrote that down. I would say I live my life through doing crazy things and trying things that have never been done before. And as a result, I've failed a lot, but I've also learned a lot and gotten some really cool experiences along the way. So stretch yourself, do that thing that's super uncomfortable, and you'll never lose. You'll either learn or you'll win, one of the two, but you will not lose. So I love that. That's a great summary message. Rick, how can people find out more about you, your show, your company? And of course, you also have a newsletter on your website I wanted to highlight as well.
Yes, probably the best place to go, John, would be rickwalker.com, rickwalker.com. And I've got links to my Twitter, to my YouTube, to my Rumble there, and also my newsletter. I would be very appreciative if you would sign up for our newsletter. I just started off 2 weeks ago. So it's a very, very brand new project. So every sign up is very, very helpful. In those newsletters, I'll start talking through some strategic ideas, some ideas that come out of the historical philosophies, historical literature, the various world religions, and how those interpose, and we can use it to strategically lead others and lead ourselves to the next level.
Fantastic. And again, there's so many resources. We didn't even get to touch on so many that Rick has on his website, his YouTube page. You have a whole section on transformational leadership, one of my favorite topics. We didn't even get a chance to talk about it. You talk about leadership styles. You talk about servant leadership. Go to his YouTube page. We're going to have that on, a link on there as well. There's so much free information. If you want to become a better leader, more impactful leader, hook up with Rick, get on his website, sign up for the newsletter, subscribe to his YouTube channel, and you're going to be a better leader as a result. So, Rick, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you for sharing your journey, your stories, and I think everything you shared is going to help us all to be better leaders. So I appreciate your time, and I appreciate what you've shared today.
Thank you, John, for blessing me. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you again. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share so we can continue to build a world with better bosses. Until next time, this is John Rennie saying take care and lead well.
Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all you do.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. For more information and updates, please visit our website at www.deepleadershippodcast.com or johnsrennie.com. Until next time, take care.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Peter.
We're the founders of Electrocast Media, bringing you great podcasts like Nightmare Road Stories, Tech Talk Revolution, and Bodacious Minds.
Electrocast networks include Ruby for female empowerment, the Best Business Network, and GPN for geopolitics. We built this company to create community and amplify diverse voices, and we really appreciate your support.
So, keep listening to Electrocast podcasts and hear the culture.
Electrocast.
Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Baklaan.
And I'm Eden Alpert.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electrocast production.
See you there.
Electrocast.